KHOI, Joy City and Ames.
Welcome to Local Talk Tuesday, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events of our Central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with interim station manager and our engineer this morning, Mike Murphy, along with good neighbor Pat Schlerbaum. And because KHOI is the heart of our Iowa community, Anna Magnuson, alias Anna Banana, is with us, and later in the hour we'll share her heart-to-heart and tune-in Tuesday messages.
Today we start out with mostly cloudy skies, but with a bit more sunshine in the afternoon hours. Daytime high will reach 45, while the winds continue from the southeast in the 15 to 25 mile per hour range. Overnight, more clouds will move in as wind speeds decrease a bit and temperatures drop into the low 30s.
Pat, we've got a special group of guests today. We're going to highlight one of our jewels of the park system here, names the Ada Hayden Heritage Park.
Oh, wonderful, boy. And the trumpeter swans have sure been putting on a show out of Ada Hayden.
They'll trumpet in our guests here, and I would like to start by introducing Kay Berger, Irv Kloss, and Jim Pease with us. Welcome to KHOI. I would just like the three of you, if you could just share some of your memories and a bit of the history of the Ada Hayden Heritage Park, how it started, and where we're going.
And it is the 20th anniversary.
So maybe Kay would like to start.
Oh, my. Well, we moved into our house at 4121, is that it? Dawes Drive. That was in, we moved in when it was before the lake was built in 1973. Or so. And we saw them digging the earth there in the north, the huge quarry. Yeah, Hallett's Quarry. It was Hallett's Quarry. And they were digging the lake. A lot of things happened while the lake was being built. It started in the north, digging down about 35 feet, as I remember. There was a huge crane that became kind of an icon there. And there was a golf green next to our house owned by Charles Calhoun, as I remember. And one of the incidents that was really funny was that we saw his mother, Calhoun's mother, she was on the city council at the time, carry two shopping bags down to that little golf green down there, and she would carry these two shopping bags down Dawes Drive. Our kids used to wade through the swampy water. We had three kids at the time, and Mrs. Calhoun would carry these two bags down. She would go into this little hut that was down there on there, and our little five-year-old son at the time waded through the water down to this little hut. They would talk to Mrs. Calhoun. And one day, Dusty came up out of that swamp, and he came up to the door, and he said, "Mommy, Mommy," he was crying. He said, "Mrs. Calhoun doesn't have any way to get home." And so I said, "Okay, well, I got the car out and put the cat and the dog and everybody that comes with us in the house." And we went down and to just next door. It was just a little ways with our car. And she got in the car carrying her two shopping bags. And I said, "Mrs. Calhoun, where do you live?" And this is what she said, "I don't know," like that. And that's become a kind of a watchword in our family. So I called the councilman and I said, "Where does she live?" And we took her home. But that's one of the things that happened at the swamp.
As that developed and they kept moving closer and closer to your property as far as they were removing the gravels and that kind of thing?
Yes, they moved closer and closer. And as they moved, well, we saw one of the small machines, it fell in the swamp, fell in the Hallett's quarry, and they had to dig it out. That was in front of our house. And that was kind of an event that we got to see. I started working then, Irv and Jim and everybody. Do you want me to continue my story?
Let me have Irv talk just briefly about when Hallett's Quarry, when plans were starting to be made for the actual quarry as it was being played out. Could you pick the story up from there, Irv?
I was in my last month of work. I was retiring at the end of 1999. And in the first week of that month, I went to a conference in Chicago, Fish and Wildlife Conference, Midwest Fish and Wildlife, which is going on in Des Moines right now, by the way. And when I came back, John Downing, who was on our faculty, called me into his office and he said, Herbie said, they're planning on a large housing development out on the north next to Hallett's Quarry. And he said, we've got to stop this. This is very bad for the water. He was consulted by the city about whether or not this housing development would affect the water quality in Hayden Park. And he said it would really negatively affect it. So we got together about 13 people within a week, and we went to the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting that was about the 13th or 14th of December. And we testified that this housing development was bad. So the Planning and Zoning actually listened to us and recommended to the city that they deny this housing development. And so one thing led to another, and then the city council met in that week, the next week. And they were going to consider the annexation of the property and allow the housing development to go ahead. We got together a few more people. And so pretty soon we had, I think, 15. And we went down to the city council meeting and got the city council to deny it. It was a vote of 4-1. And we were really elated over all that. But of course, the developer didn't give up, and we had to continue to oppose this thing for the next several months as one proposal after another came back. That's about it. I felt really good about this because I had been working in conservation research and education for all my life, and I had never been involved really directly with trying to save a natural area or anything similar, except to belong to organizations that did that. And I think that saving natural areas or even saving endangered species like the trumpeter swan, for example, it lifts our spirit and gives us hope for the future. And hope that we as a human species can manage our appetites so that nature, which sustains us with clean air and clean water and healthy soils and so much more, that will endure for generations to come. It's this hope that drives our will to conserve places like Hayden Park.
For our listeners, there may be a few listeners that don't know exactly where Ada Hayden Heritage Park is located. When it was first a quarry, it was filling with water because of the shallow water table, due to the proximity next to the Skunk River, and it was the water that was the impetus for saving this area, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct, Irv?
Yeah, at that time, in fact, in 1977, the city had run close to running out of water. Some of their wells were being drawn down because of the drought. The Skunk River went dry, and actually the Silk River is the place where the aquifer that we draw our drinking water from is replenished. That water goes down through the bed of the river, and that's how we get our water. Well, Merwin Dougal, who was a hydrologist at Iowa State University, told the city that if they pump water from Hallett's Quarry over into the Skunk River, that it would recharge the aquifer. And they put a low head dam down by River Valley Park and to hold about 4 feet of water in the river. And so that's how we know that this lake was very important to our drinking water supply. Not only that, but John Downing said that this water was as clean as Lake Okoboji, and which is the cleanest water in the state. So we've had a case there, I think, for saving this park. That's how it all came about, as I recall.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, Lake Okoboji is listed as a blue water lake because of the clarity of that water. Jim, how did you get involved?
Well, I got involved early with Irv, and because I had been on statewide radio for a number of years by then, I had a recognizable voice to a lot of people. And so I did several radio spots that were broadcast on local radio stations at the time to try during this effort to actually pass a bond issue in order for it to become a park. The city had to purchase it back from the developers. And so I did that and a couple of radio spots, and Irv involved me in some other ways. And it was quite an amazing bond issue. City may recall that it was passed, and bond issues don't get passed easily. They had to pass by 60%. Well, we passed it by 86%. 86%. Bond issues never pass by that much. And so it's quite amazing that this group of people, Irv and Kay and others, did that campaign. The mayor at the time got involved with us in a very positive way, Ted Tedesco, and lots of council people got on board as well. So it's really been it was a community effort. And I think Irv is absolutely right. It brought the community together in a way that I think gave us hope as a community and for the future. And I think you're right, Irv. It was clean water that really did it. But it's really the habitat that surrounds it that keeps people coming back. It is certainly one of the most popular parks. But it was an effort to get it done, and it came originally from the citizenry of Ames. And I think that's what we're most proud of, is that it was a citizen involvement.
Yeah, it was very similar to this idea, the funding of the wildlife program that we want to get statewide, that people, your bond issue percentage proved that people want these kinds of things, that this is important to us. And I know, you know, when this became a park, Kay, you lived next to that, and had that benefit as it was a park, but then unfortunately you had to relocate. Tell us a little bit about your feelings, or do you have other comments related to what Jim and Irv have said? Share those with us, please.
I think that the what Jim said about the bond issue pass, we would go door to door. We had people going door to door. We had parties at our house at the time to encourage the people of Ames to go to vote for this. And that's why we got the high vote we did. As it was being developed, we would just the thrill of having Ada Hayden developed was amazing. And now, as we had to move, or we thought we did when we got to be in our 80s, that we should move from our big house into a more secure house for the elderly. So now we live at Northcrest, and we are enjoying Ada Hayden is just a beautiful place for all of us to go. I was on the board with Jim and Irv when he was on the board, and that was a joy to me. We now bought a bench that sits in front of our house.
I'd like to mention that Kay and I were invited to a little luncheon at a restaurant downtown by Ted Tedesco and Nancy Carroll, who was head of the Parks and Rec at that time. And they asked us to co-chair the bond issue campaign. And we conducted that campaign just like a political campaign. We had yard signs. I think we bought 700 yard signs and put them up, Save Hallett's Quarry. So that was quite an experience for us. And also later on in 2010, which was after the park was formed, Kay and Roger donated some money to set up an endowment fund. We have now an endowment fund thanks to another anonymous donor who contributed several hundred thousand dollars. And now that endowment fund enables us to do things at the park that the city can't do. And Jim was responsible for designing and producing the interpretive signs that are out there. And the Friends Group paid for that. And we're doing other things, like buying park benches. And also we sponsor an annual tour with golf carts for people that can't walk and see the park themselves. So that's how we continue to be involved. And that's what's really a joy to me.
And what's amazing is you all must feel really proud to, every time you go by there, you never see that park where there isn't somebody walking around the pathways and using the facility every day of the year. That leads to the next question. What are you doing? Are you involved in projects to help protect that water quality as we go into the future? Can we briefly talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for asking that, Mike, because we've been involved in of a number of ways of trying to continue to grow and protect the park. As you know, it's being developed to the north in particular. It was developed on the south right away and soon be developed on the west. We've done a number of things to try to educate the neighbors. We have what we call our neighbors brochure, which talks about the fact that we are neighbors and we need to live together, but this is a little different kind of park. This is not a vast mowed area for playground equipment. That this is a wild park, and that requires a different sort of neighborly relationship. And so we put out a brochure to help neighbors understand the park and understand the management that is there. Irv and I wrote the management plan for the park, and the city tries to implement that. In addition, the land to the north and west, which is actually the main watershed for the park, is continuing to be developed. It will now, it used to be called Rose Prairie, was now being called Hayden's Preserve, and it is neither. But that major stream that comes in from the north and the west drains a lot of ag land and then gets into the wetlands on the west part of the park, sort of the northwest corner of the park. Those wetlands are stormwater wetlands, which help filter the water before it gets into the lake to try to keep that lake clean. So we're very concerned about that development. So we're now, though we tried to have it 170-acre Rose Prairie area turned into an extension of the park, we lost that battle with city council. But they did direct the developer to work with us. And so we've been meeting with the developer to try to improve their development plans and been successful so far. In addition, Auburn Trail, which will drain is to the south of where Rose Prairie was. Auburn Trail is, we're working with the city on that one as well. We opposed the current development plans, and they're back to redoing theirs. And in addition, we've just been successful working with the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation at securing the purchase of a portion of the Sturgis property that was just passed by the city council last week. And so we're trying to protect the watershed in every way we can to protect the future of the lake and certainly the wetlands that are to the west, and because that's where the main water comes into those lakes. So we have to be vigilant and involved with the city politically and understand their concerns as well. So we work very, very closely with the Parks Department and the City Council. City Council knows us. I said that we were a thorn in their side, and they said, "Oh no, we're not a thorn in their side." so we try to express. We speak for the park, because the park can't speak for itself.
And it's one of those things that, for the psychology of our citizenry and the quality of life, it's a very important component. And as we wrap this up, I'd like to give Kay, we've got about, I want to give you about a half a minute or so to, if you've got any last words, and then I'll go to Irv. So go ahead.
I think the beautiful park that has developed has been a pleasure for us to watch and to enjoy now that it is all done. And I've thoroughly enjoyed working with Irv and Jim and everybody that was on the board when I was on the board. I also would like to say a lot about the city that supported, as we were living next to the park, the city, Keith, can't remember his last name.
Abrahams.
We work closely just to support this park. I think the city has done a very good job of supporting us, working toward this beautiful park that we have. And we've so enjoyed. I love sitting on our bench that's looking toward the north and seeing that beautiful park that was developed. And I thank you very much, KHOI, allowing me to and all of us to come.
Yeah, we thank you for your words. That's for sure, Kay. Pat's got a comment here.
Oh, I was just hoping to hear a little bit more from Irv Kloss, in some regards, one of our conservation leaders that's included in the stones of Ada Hayden. And Irv, it's just so wonderful that you're included with the stones and all the conservation leaders of that got us to this point, and your leadership goes on.
And with that,
well,
Irv,
thanks,
you have the last word, Irv.
Well, I just want to say that the park provides a home for hundreds, if not thousands, of species of plants and animals. Hopefully they'll be there for the seventh generation.
Thank you, Irv. Thank you, Kay. And thank you, Jim, for joining us this morning to talk about Ada Hayden Heritage Park. And I know we'll be talking more about this in the future. Thanks for all you have done, not only for the resource, but for the mental health and stability of the citizens who, without your drive, wouldn't have this jewel to be able to participate in and learn from. It's a walking laboratory. It's a place people can go out and learn a little something. I know that the Friends also have some sponsor some groups that go out and help interpret what they see through the course of the year. Thanks again. Thank you for joining us today. And with that, we will go on to our next section. Thank you. And as Linus trudges around Ada Hayden Heritage Park, I want to briefly get Sam Wormley in here for a couple of minutes to talk about the OLLIE program. We've got spring classes coming up, and there's a few dates that we need to keep in mind. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Mike. The OLLIE program, OLLIE actually stands for Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, and there are many around the country, and a couple here in Iowa, one at Iowa State and one at Drake University. Our spring classes start the third week of March, and this Thursday, just a couple of days away, is an open house that everyone can attend and learn about classes, hear what the instructors have to say, and so on. And I'd just like to let everybody know that the website to be able to connect with that is OLLIE.iastate.edu. And to get information by contacting through email, it's OLLIE@iastate.edu. The OLLIE program is for all individuals who are 50 years and older and desire to continue to expand their knowledge in a wide variety of topics that are organized by the OLLIE program here. This was almost exclusively an on-campus program through the Iowa State Alumni Center with over 900 members until the pandemic forced changes. And with the struggles came advantages, like being able to offer courses to participants across the nation. And we have at least people from 18 states taking OLLIE courses these days. You can get information by going to the website, OLLIE, O-L-L-I, iastate.edu. And the email address is OLLIE, O-L-L-I, iastate.edu.
Okay. Sam, can you just give an example of one or two of the classes that are being offered this spring, and then that will maybe tease people into joining in Thursday to find out what's going on.
Right. There are 49 course offerings this spring, again, starting about the third week of March. And just some examples: learning iPads and iPhones, the classics, what to read and or not to read, classical music, make your home equity plan a part of your retirement plan, the great decisions of 2022. That's a, you know, understanding what's going on politically in the country. Another course, more yoga for everybody, and Iowa landowners and farmers working together for conservation. It's just a spread of all different kinds of topics. And Mike, that's just seven of the 49.
Yeah, sounds like something we'd even let Anna, because we don't card for ages, so she could even slip in and maybe take a class. Is that right?
Well, you know, I want to give Anna credit because she's going to be an instructor at another OLLIE program in a different part of the country. And boy, my hat is off to Anna.
And that's not to say, unfortunately, I understand her class is filled, but gosh, with Zoom technology, you too could have joined in with Anna in that particular class, but I digress. So anything else to add?
Well, let me clarify that, you know, as the pandemic sort of wanes down a little bit, we hope that there will be some in-person classes again. In fact, this spring, they're planning on doing that. There will be some hybrid classes where people can choose to either attend in person or attend virtually via Zoom. And of course, there's a great number of classes that are Zoom only. And these classes are wonderful for people outside the central Iowa area and people that are confined to their homes, don't want to deal with weather issues and so on. So it's really a nice program accommodating lots of different people.
Okay, Sam, thank you for that information, and we'll be joining you Thursday, because I know as part of that Thursday orientation, some of the instructors give a 90-second review of what their class is about. Is that correct?
Right. I'm one of the instructors, and I would be, I have up to 90 seconds to sell my class and say why it's so good.
Okay, without getting stuck in that elevator. So, thank you, Sam.
Okay, Mike.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go
And if you're just tuning in to KHOI, I'm Mike Metz, your host for the hour with Pat Schlarbaum and Mike Murphy at the controls, and Anna Bananas waiting in the wings. But now we're joining our favorite downtown young lady, Susan Guiasta. How are you this morning, Susan?
Wow, well, that's a great intro. Thank you. I'm going to hope for that one every time I see you, Mike. So it's another busy day at the City of Ames. We do have a city council meeting tonight. It is a workshop meeting. Start time is 6 o'clock at City Hall. The council will just be discussing. It's kind of part two of the city council goals, values, and priorities. Again, if you don't want to come to City Hall and watch, you can watch it through our streaming services, Facebook, YouTube, or off our website, cityofames.org. Just look for the Channel 12 icon, and you can get to the council meeting for tonight. Also, a reminder, next Monday, City Hall and most city offices will be closed for President's Day. So that one kind of catches people off guard, but that's a good one to sort of file away. If you have city business, please come see us Friday or Tuesday. And remember, there is no meter enforcement on city holidays, so you don't have to pay your parking meter.
That's good to know. Everybody comes down to the city on President's Day. Must have something to do with sales.
Yeah. So I thought this might be a good time at this point in the winter to maybe talk again about some spring street construction projects that we have coming up. Again, I have tried to bring some of our engineers on the show regularly just to kind of talk about their projects, how we decide what streets to reconstruct, what that means if you live along the street or close to the street, how long some of those projects take, and some of the other factors that go into a street reconstruction. So I have Dean Sayer with us this morning.
Yes, good morning, Dean. We seem to have talked about a month ago, longer, but construction and reconstruction never end to keep our city running well. So what have you got for us today? What are you going to share with us?
Yeah, it's kind of a ongoing cycle. You're either working on construction or working on getting ready for next year's projects. Yeah. I was going to just touch on some of the projects we got coming up here this spring and summer. I think last time we touched a little bit on 13th Street.
Right.
I do have a little bit of an update on 24th and Stang. We've kind of run into a little bit of snag with that one with some of our railroad stuff. So it looks like that one may be delayed, and it's probably not going to be going here next year. So you won't see any construction out on 24th Street or staying next year, probably the following year.
That was the stretch, from the railroad tracks to Stang?
Yep, on 24th? From the railroad tracks to Stang on 24th, and then Blankenberg Drive up to 24th Street on Stang.
Okay.
So it'll be a pretty good size 2-year project. So let's look more like it'll start next year then.
Gotcha. So that means you've got individuals, you've got workers who can be on another project.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because that one was also a DOT project. So it's a little more complicated when it goes through the DOT. So that'll help clear up things or make things a little simpler for next year's construction season. There's a lot of big projects going on, too, with 13th Street and then South 16th Street, too. So that'll be a big one that'll be going on here next year.
Now, you're talking about 13th Street. Which section are we discussing again, just for listeners who didn't hear the last time?
So 13th Street will be going on again, kind of same as last year, but it'll be from Duff Avenue, and then it'll stretch down to Meadow Lane at the bottom of the hill.
Okay.
And it'll be the same kind of deal, a full reconstruction project with a lane of traffic in both directions at all times.
Gotcha.
There'll be another tight work zone.
No, go ahead. How about there is a piece of 13th Street, and I know the city goes out partway east of I-35, but the neighborhood was saying that at some point the rest of that piece will be surfaced at some point from 580th East. Is that in the near future, or is that a ways out? Or are you not involved in that?
No, not at this point. Usually I'm more involved with them 2 years out. So that might be something that could be in the long-term transportation plan. So it very well could be, but I guess I'm not quite up on that information.
Okay. I didn't know if that had something to do with the development in the Prairie View area corridor between Nevada and Ames. I assume it's associated with that project.
If there is plans for that, it probably wouldn't be in the coming year, because I know they've been working on some maintenance and some other stuff out there while the wall's closed for the Prairie View project. Hopefully that one will be open back up here and in the next few months too. They're doing pretty good work out there getting that sanitary sewer in also.
Yeah, it's amazing that they're able to work in this kind of weather out there and continue to do the good job they're doing.
Yeah, it's going really well, especially for considering the weather. Some of these cold days, and they're still out there working.
Yeah. How about north-south corridors? Are there any pieces of that we need to concern ourselves with as far as getting around traffic flow?
So the Hoover Avenue will also be a project next year, and that'll be from 24th Street to 30th Street. And so that'll be a pretty good-sized project as well. And that'll be a combination of reconstruction and rehabilitation. Some of it will be just doing a mill and overlay, and other parts of it will be taking it all the way down to the dirt and building it back up.
So when you're doing these projects, I assume you try to plan it so that you've got the utilities like water, sewer, any electrical. You try to integrate all of that so you only have to do it once.
Yeah, that's what we'd like to do, because that plays a big part into kind of what project and when we do it, because we try to, the utilities need upgrading. Usually they're underneath the roadway, so the roadway's got to come out. So we try to plan it where the utilities are updated, and then we can put in a new roadway at the same time. So there is quite a bit of coordination between the two, and with having storm, water, and sanitary, sometimes it can be a little bit challenging. The last thing we want to do is put in a new street and then say have a water main break a few years out, and then they got to go in there and cut out the new pavement. I mean, it does happen, but it's something we try to avoid.
Sure. Yeah, it saves, in the long run, it's saving time and money if you can get it all done on the first take. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. When they cut out that pavement, that adds a joint in there, and that's another spot in the future for deterioration and maintenance needs.
Now, how do you handle construction projects that are associated or combined with some of the university properties that university and city are connected with? Is that another layer that you have to consider?
Yeah, we do have to work with Iowa State on some. We usually have meetings with them where we kind of coordinate projects and kind of see that way they don't conflict too much. And a lot of times when ISU owns both properties on both sides of the road, it's kind of their jurisdiction and it's their responsibility as far as the like storm and sanitary and then the roadway itself. So there is some coordination on that, where like up on Stang, where it's pretty close and we have ISU on one side and then city property on the other. It does take a lot of coordination. And I've had several meetings with them working through, and the timing, especially a big area where there's a lot of students, it takes quite a bit of coordination with them. And then you have to throw in Cyrite in there too, whenever, usually around the ISU property. So takes quite a bit of coordination.
Yeah. Hats off to the group, not only for what you've done as far as the 13th Street piece. I know Anna smiles a lot when she drives down that portion now. But also, you know, let's not forget that corridor that you just recently completed between Lincoln Way and South 16th, that cut through that Grand. That's a great drive, and it sure saves time on my account when I got to get down to the south side without having to stop at the businesses along Duff, for example.
Yeah, that was a great project. That was one of the other engineers in the office, Afis, handled a lot of that, and it went really smooth. And it actually, I think it got done on time for being such a big and large project. And I use it a lot myself too. It's nice to get down to the south side of South Duff without having to go through the super busy area.
Yeah. Are there other projects that we need to be aware of here in the start for spring through summer?
Another one that will be a pretty good one will be North Dakota and Ontario, that intersection.
Sure. Okay.
Right next to the elementary school. That'll all end up going under full reconstruction here too. It'll go from that intersection north to the railroad tracks, and then from that intersection to the east a little ways in front of that school building, taking out that old concrete overlay. So that'll be another good-sized project that we'll have coming up also.
I'm sure you'll have a notification when those times for construction are starting.
Yep.
Folks in that area.
Yeah, we do have a construction map on our webpage too that people can usually go and check out, and kind of gives a little map, and it shows where our projects are, and we try to keep it updated every few weeks where we kind of put in the progress of where the project is at. But it's a pretty good resource too for citizens to go take a look at and kind of see ongoing construction around the city too.
Well, I just want to, again, hats off to your group for doing what you do, because I'm sure a lot of times you get nothing but people grousing about having to go around cones and barriers and things. But without you guys, we couldn't get around here. There'd be a lot more work in a mechanic shop if it wasn't for your department.
So, well, I appreciate it. And generally, we do hear quite a few citizens that are pretty happy. So it's just enjoy working for a city of Ames where we have pretty good residents and highly educated residents that are understanding about a lot of this stuff. So it makes my job a little bit better.
Well, I always liked taking things apart as a kid, and I still kind of do. And to be able to see, in quotes, the guts of what's going on those construction projects is always interesting and educational. So I don't think some folks realize what goes on a project like that. So, maybe we'll have to have one of you folks teach an Ollie class on what's involved in a road construction. That'd be great.
They can definitely get pretty complicated sometimes. Sometimes they're easy and sometimes they're not. About anything in life.
Okay. All right, Dean, anything else before we wrap up?
That's about it. I mean, we still have a couple other smaller projects around town too, some more residential areas, but I think that kind of touched on a lot of the bigger ones anyways that impact a majority of people.
Okay, well, appreciate having you come in and sharing those plans with us and keeping us informed. Thank you, Dean. Thank you, Susan. We'll be talking to you again soon.
Thanks for having us.
Daylight come and me want go home. Work all night and a drink a rum.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Stack banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Well, you know, I think I'm going to have bananas in my cereal today, but before we do that, Anna Magnuson, Anna Bananas with us. Welcome back, and it's great to see your smiling face.
There's nothing like a restorative vacation to, like, energize you and get you re-engaged. And don't forget the banana bread that's there, Mike.
You know, yeah, I just want to give you a shout-out for covering yesterday local talk. We could actually tell you had a nervous relaxedness in your voice at the very beginning when things weren't quite, you know, we're still trying to shake out the bugs here in the new studio, but it's great to have you back. And what do you have to share with us for your heart-to-heart message today?
Ooh, that's a good message to go into Tune In Tuesday as I try and tempt you to listen to KHOI. And I am excited, so I'll fast forward just for a second and then rewind. But I am excited because I will be in the new studio tonight for heart-to-heart messages. So I'm looking forward to Mike Murphy showing me the ropes for the new building. Now, But let's rewind and let's go back to Tune In Tuesday. How do we start Tune In Tuesday? All right, Mike Metz, how did the two ice fishermen initiate the conversation? So what did these two ice fishermen do to start the conversation?
Broke the ice.
They broke the ice. And that is my icebreaker to start out to our Tune In Tuesday to initiate the conversation about what? One of our favorite KHOI shows, the Donna Lana Kitchen Show. For this Tuesday, will be packed full of interesting subjects to include catfish, ice fishing, ponds, lakes, streams. Speaking of Ada Hayden Park, and Ben Holkish joins the dynamic duo to talk about fishing in the Iowa waters, including the Mississippi.
They'll also share. Sounds like that you could hook a few listeners on that one.
Yeah, I'm hooked.
Stop taking my jokes, Mike Metz. So they also will be giving tips for catching, cleaning, cooking, and smoking. And she doesn't say this, but I'm assuming it means the fish that are caught. And they will also look at some upcoming events and the outlook for the local maple syrup season. Interesting. Because I was gone for the last couple of weeks, I do have some other jokes because I know you missed them. So, Mike, what happened when the fish went to a seafood disco party?
He pulled out his wallet, and that was the first time you saw wallet-to-wallet carpeting.
That's a very creative answer. Well, what happened when this fish went to a seafood disco party? Well, she pulled a muscle. But you won't pull a muscle, and you will feel that you've joined a party when you tune in to the Donna Lana Kitchen Show. And if you've forgotten, the Donna Lana Kitchen Show, they talk about food, farming, recipes, advice, and opinions. Chef Donna and Farmer Lana explore the local food scene with lively discussion and good humor when? On Tuesdays at noon and repeated at 7 p.m. All right, Sam, you're taking a drink, but I'm going to, as you think about this, why are fish so smart? Do you know?
Oh, I know fish have fins.
They do have fins, but why are fish so smart? Because they swim in schools. Now, speaking of smart, you and Mike Metz have this wonderful show called Science Bites. And I know that you're not fishing for compliments, but you are too, smarty pants. So what will we learn about if we tune into Science Bites this week?
Well, you're going to have to tune in to see what you're going to learn about it. It may have something to do with the environment.
Oh, then it makes sense. Can you confirm that, Sam?
I can confirm that. In fact, at 4:30 this afternoon, I will confirm it.
Okay. And then you got another chance to listen to Science Bites when, if you missed today?
It's at Saturday mornings at 10:30. It's rebroadcast.
Ooh, very good. So two chances to listen to Science Bites. And so let me ask you this, Sam. I'm going to go back to you for a second. A very serious question. What did the school-going fish get on his biology test? So what did the fish that went to school, what did he earn in his biology test?
Oh, Anna, I'm confused every time.
Well, the wording of this one's a little odd. So this fish that went to school, he took his biology test, and he earned a C+.
I don't get it.
I
know that, but I don't get
C+.
It.
Plus.
You don't get it. Okay, well, let's try another one then. Do you know why the student fish was sad after his weekly test result? His grades were below the sea level.
And Anna, you know that these jokes are like visiting relatives. After 3 days, the fish stinks.
So there's more. There's so many more jokes. But I'm going to move on because after you listen to Science Bites today at 4:30, as I was saying, I get to come into the studio today in the new home, and you can tune in at 8:30 p.m. to listen to the Heart to Heart Messages show. And I'm really excited because we will spend our time with Laura Kilbride, who serves as the College of Human Sciences Student Services Specialist at Iowa State University. So in 2021, a university-wide program launched that focused on supporting students who age out of foster care, are homeless, or whose families are unable to provide emotional support. It tapped into existing student support services on the Iowa State campus and provides a community structure for its undergraduate and graduate members, and will also appeal to staff and faculty benevolence. So Students on the Rise in Education, Stories for Short, is the brainchild of our guest, Laura Kilbride, and it combines her work and a personal commitment to advocating for disadvantaged youth. So 5 years ago, she trained to become a court-appointed special advocate, also known as a CASA, for children in Story County, and subsequently a licensed foster parent, primarily for teenage girls. She was also working on a master's degree in student affairs. So many of her course projects focused on foster teens, but she noticed that the population wasn't part of the most of the discussions. So she spent a few years researching university programs for students who had been in foster care and found some strong ones, but none in Iowa. So she advocated for one at the Iowa State University. And she's quoted as saying, "We're the land grant, we're about open access." And so her supervisor, Clayton Johnson, took her proposal to associate deans who approved the plan last year. And then Kilbride also said, "This is really an innovative program for the state of Iowa, the first of its kind. So it's exciting we can step out and be the leader on this." And her hope is that we'll continue to see programs like this across the country. So Kilbride recruited a core team of 15 to 20 university employees who are passionate about helping this specific student population. So I'm really excited that she'll be a guest tonight to talk about this program and her work for those that are vulnerable children in our community. So you can tune in on Tuesdays at 8:30 tonight to hear that interview. All right, so Pat, are you in the house?
Pat's shaking his head. He's not in the house. He can't hear you.
Okay, so Mike, Metz, back to you. What kind of music should you be listening to while you're fishing?
Love is a many splendored thing.
Wah, 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 wah. Something catchy. Now, speaking of catchy, on the next KHOY Jukebox with Eric B. In the first hour, he will be highlighting a song that has been sampled a whopping 1,745 times. Jeez. Some songs you may recognize, but others are quite the surprise. And then in hour two, the Ladies of Soul and R&B will round out the afternoon. So you can join Eric B. Tuesdays at 2 p.m. on your FM dial locked in at 89.1 and on our website at khoyfm.org. Now, Sam, do you know what the most musical part of a fish is?
The overture.
Okay, or the scales. So speaking of musical parts, you don't want to forget You Name It with Mike Murphy, which is part of the programming on Thursdays from 2 to 4 p.m. So make sure you tune in and call in at 515-232-0365 and let him know what you think about what he has selected for our listeners and the musical part of a fish and scales. We'll see if he's going to do anything exciting with that.
You know, Anna?
Yeah?
Sam has a joke for you about neutrinos.
Neutrinos?
Yep.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, two neutrinos walked into the bar. The barkeep says, "What'll you have?" And the neutrino said, "Nothing. We're just passing through."
That's a good one. Dun, and, dun, dun.
Yeah, and with that, we have to wrap up here, Anna.
I know, and I don't want to waste your time. So to tune out the heart-to-heart messages, what did the local host say when everyone was getting annoyed at her fish jokes? I really should scale back. But don't scale back on listening to KHOY on Tuesdays. So back to you.
Thank you, Anna. KHOI provides a platform for citizen and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI, your community nonprofit, nonpartisan media.
Thanks to our interim manager, Mike Murphy, and thank you to Lynn Carey, and thanks for all the assistance and your heartfelt messages, Anna Magnuson. You heard from Kay Berger, Herb Kloss, Jim Pease, founding members of the Friends of Ada Hayden Heritage Park, KHOI Sam Warmley with the Olive Spring Offerings, Susan Gwiazda, Public Information Officer, and Civil Engineer Dean Sayer, both with the City of Ames.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. So thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And
see you again on the radio.
KHOI Joy City.